times because Jesus saw this man that no one really had ever seen. At the beginning of the story, John says, as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. He saw someone that other people didn't notice. He saw this man. Other people didn't notice him because he was a blind beggar. And Jesus calls him aside and he looks at him and Jesus restores his sight and Jesus heals him. And there's this real interesting part in the story. Later on, John says that this man returns to the neighborhood where he was a beggar. He had been blind from birth, so he had probably been begging in the same place, in the same neighborhood for maybe 30, 40, 50 years. John says, his neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. And here's what's going on. This blind man had been with these people in this neighborhood for, 30, 40, 50 years, and they had paid so little attention that they now couldn't even recognize if it was the guy or not. They never noticed him. He was just kind of part of the scenery. No one ever really looked at him. No one stopped to see. They overlooked him, but Jesus didn't. Jesus noticed him. Jesus looked at him. He saw him. And Jesus does this all the time. Someone in the Gospel of Mark comes up to Jesus, and there's this wonderful phrase, Jesus looked at him and loved him. This guy comes up to Jesus, and Jesus looks. He really looks at him, and his heart is moved with compassion, and he finds himself filled with love toward this person because he stopped and because he looked at him. So let me just ask you a question. How are you doing at this one? Like, when's the last time you really looked at someone? When was the last time you looked at a friend or a spouse or a child, like full in the face, and you just saw what makes their face light up? You just saw what fills them with joy. You saw what makes their shoulders sag in defeat. Like, when's the last time you really looked at someone? You know, there are people who go through whole days and their eyes are open, but they never really see anyone all day long. And Jesus, who is the greatest listener who had ever lived, was a champion at looking at people. He saw people that no one else noticed. World-class listeners do that. Another thing skilled listeners do is they ask questions. Jesus does this. I mean, go throughout the Gospels. Like, look at the story of Jesus' life. You'll see this over and over and over again. Jesus asked questions. He said of one person, what do you want? He said of another person, like, who do people say that I am? What does the law say? What are you arguing about? Where is your husband? He said to one woman. Why do you call me good? He asked someone else. And then he would just stop, and he would wait, and he would listen. I mean, you go through his life, he asks questions of Roman army officers, rabbis, prostitutes, disciples, politicians, mothers, lawyers, and then he would just listen. He was genuinely interested in what people would say. I mean, this is so extraordinary. This is Jesus, the wisest person who ever lived. I mean, and I'll tell you the truth, if I had anywhere near the kind of wisdom that Jesus had, I think I would go around and tell people what to do all day long. I mean, I would just want to go around saying, listen to me, people, listen to my wisdom. But Jesus, the wisest man who ever lived, over and over again in relationships, he doesn't start with what he knows. He starts by asking a question. And he's genuinely interested in their life, in their mind, in their heart, in what they think, in how they feel. And so he asks a question and he just remains silent. He looks at them and he listens to them. And people flocked to him. I mean, he couldn't get away from people because not only was he the wisest person that they had ever known, not only was he like so powerful, he was genuinely interested in them, like no one they'd ever known in their life. And these people were people that no one else noticed. I mean, they were the blind and the lame and the lepers and the lost and the marginalized. And here's the deal, you can do this. I can do this. You can look at people and you can start asking questions of people that you know. Like, what gives you joy? What are you learning these days? You can ask casual questions of casual acquaintances, you know, like, how's your family? How's your work? You can ask deeper questions of deeper friends. How's your heart? How's your soul? And be interested in what they say. Champion listeners do that. And champion listeners are patient. They don't rush to judgment or to evaluate what another person says, which honestly, I think I do way too much. Immediately when I start talking with someone and they start saying something, I start to think, you know, well, I agree with that or I don't agree with that. And then I feel like I have to say it. World-class listeners don't feel the need to express every opinion that runs through their minds. A lot of thoughts will go through their minds and they just don't express them because they want to be listening and they want to understand. Something else skilled listeners do, they offer appropriate touch. They know that something that sometimes a hand on the shoulder of another person or an embrace for a cherished friend can communicate far more than words ever could. Now, this has to be done appropriately. You know, different cultures have different boundaries and different rules and all that. I was actually reading some research. They actually do studies on this kind of stuff. Researchers have found that the French and the Italians, which are high-touch cultures, in conversations, will touch each other sometimes 100 times or more in an hour. Americans touch about 3 times an hour generally. I'm Dutch. When I was growing up and members of my family had conversations, they generally had conversations in separate rooms. I mean, there just could be like no inadvertent touching, you know, just not even by accident. Listen, people need to be touched. Gary Smalley was speaking at a marriage seminar one time, and he cited a study done by a researcher at UCLA who found that human beings physically and emotionally, just to be healthy, for their health to be enhanced, they need to experience 8 to 10 touches in a day. You know how in vitamins there's like the minimum daily requirements. Well, there's a minimum daily requirement in touch, 8 to 10 meaningful touches in a day. If you don't have that, your health will deteriorate. You will die sooner. Gary said as he was talking about this, he saw one husband kind of lean over to his wife and go, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's not a meaningful touch. Meaningful touch is part of what God made us to need to live. And again, Jesus is just the master at this. He puts his hand on the blind man as he heals him. One of the most moving stories in the life of Jesus is when a leper comes to him and he heals him. This leper was unclean. It was against the law for any clean person to touch a leper, let alone a rabbi to touch a leper. It was against the law. It couldn't be done. Never happened. And Jesus decides to heal this leper, but he does this extraordinary thing. He could have just said the word. He could have snapped his fingers. He didn't have to touch him. He had said the word a number of times before. But here, he doesn't just say the word. He reaches down and he touches this leper while this man still has leprosy. Why does he do that? I mean, it's against the law to do that. It's because Jesus understands the power of touch. And he knows that when this man, who thinks of himself as unclean, this man who had not been touched for who knows how many years, maybe he suffered from leprosy from the time he was a child, had not been touched his whole life, this man would never forget this touch that he experienced by Jesus. He would feel this touch of Jesus' hand on his face until he dies. Touch has that kind of power. One day they brought a bunch of children to Jesus, and Jesus' disciples said to them, you know, he's a busy guy. I mean, he's important. He's got things to do. He has things to say. Like, he doesn't have time for this. Take the children away. And Jesus rebuked his disciples, and he said, no, let the little children come to me. And there's this beautiful line, and Jesus took them in his arms, and he blessed them. And some of you have children in your little relational world, maybe your own children, maybe your grandchildren, maybe your nieces or nephews. I think probably of all the people in our world, the one that we violate this relational wisdom with the most, being quick to listen, is probably our children. If you have a child in your relational world, when's the last time you looked at that child full in the face? Like, when's the last time you really listened? You put down the paper, you put down the book, you turned off the TV, and really listened, and then took that child in your arms and blessed them. And I'll tell you, it will make an enormous difference in the life of that child if you do that, if you just take the time and you really listen to that child. I mean, not 24 hours a day, not as much as that child wants, because that would not be possible or sane. It might even be unhealthy. But if you do it on a regular basis, if a child on a regular basis can have an adult in their life who puts down whatever it is they're doing and listens with undivided attention and holds that child and blesses that child, I will guarantee you, when that child grows up, that child will know that he or she is loved. When you listen, when you look, when you give undivided attention, when you give appropriate touch, when you take someone by the hand, when you embrace a friend, you give life to that person. And you can do that. You can do it starting today. All right, let's look at the last piece of relational wisdom James gives. Be slow to speak, be quick to listen, be slow to anger. And you'll notice these three instructions go together. This is part of the great wisdom of James. If you observe the first two, it will tend to come out right for number three. If you carefully cultivate the habit of listening well, if you cultivate the habit of speaking thoughtfully and with restraint, if you're quick to listen, if you're slow to speak, then you'll automatically be slow to anger. It'll just happen. On the other hand, if you fail to listen well and often misunderstand people, and if you speak without thinking, you will probably get angry a lot. And that's not good, James says, because your anger doesn't produce God's righteousness. Your anger doesn't produce right living, is another way to say righteousness, either in you or in the person you're angry with. Now, this doesn't mean never get angry. It means that human anger, unless it's managed and expressed with great skill, can lead to unintended consequences. And I could pretty much guarantee you that you're going to have the opportunity to practice this one. Be slow to anger at some point this week. Think for a moment about times when tempers tend to wear a little thin. Take, for example, a family vacation. This experience that we would think would be just this one wonderful, uninterrupted, joy-filled experience. James Dobson writes, "You would think in the mind of a child in the backseat of a car as the family's going on vacation, the child would be thinking thoughts like, wow, how generous of mom and dad to take us on a vacation. I'm going to be extra compliant in light of their generosity. I'm not going to make unusual demands or fight with my siblings or ask for more." Does it work that way in the mind of a child? No. A mom tells us about her recent drive down to Disneyland. Before leaving the driveway, the kids are fighting over who gets to sit by the window. Little sister is yelling just a few minutes into the trip, "I'm telling." And of course, tension also begins to build in the front seat. For a few hundred miles, mom and dad endure arguments, taunts, jabs, pinches, tattling, and unscheduled bathroom breaks. They're starting to lose control. Twice, dad has to swing wildly at squirming bodies in the back seat. Do you remember as a kid when your dad would do that for you? Like, this hand would come back like this blind snake, and like everyone would retreat to the corners of the back seat. And finally, dad's fuse burns down. He pulls the car over on the side of the road. He jerks out his two sons. Judgment day has come. After spanking them both, he shoves them back into the car and warns them to keep their mouths shut. "If I hear a peep from either of you for 30 minutes, he warns, you're going to get twice what you just got." And the boys got the message. They remained silent for 30 minutes, after which the older boy said, is it all right to talk now? And the father said sternly, "Yes. What do you want to say?" "Well, when you were spanking us back there, my shoe fell off." We just let anger fly, and shoes have a way of falling off. We just leave shoes in the road all over the place. And you know what that's like, don't you? I know what that's like. I had a similar experience just last week. I was in a conversation with one of my children, and I was not quick to listen. I was not slow to speak, and the anger rose in me fairly quickly. And I wanted so badly just to let it fly. And I knew it was wrong, and I knew it would do damage, but you know what? I didn't care. I just let it fly, and I wounded a heart that I don't want to wound. I did damage that's going to take some time to repair. Because once you let words fly, I mean, you could go through all the forgiveness and so on, and we need to do that, but you can't unsay those words. That's what's so devastating about them. You can't unsay them. You cannot erase them from the memory banks or the hearts of the person who heard them, and they can do so much damage. Some of you may be feeling this real deeply because you've got a relationship where you've done some immense damage and you need to do some repair work. You need to resolve today, I'm going to go back to someone I've hurt and I'm going to say, I know I just let it fly. I know I didn't observe the fundamental relational wisdom, and I've done damage to you, and I've done damage to myself, and I'm sorry. And I want to ask for your forgiveness, and I want to put a relationship on a different track, and you know what? I want to manage my anger differently. I don't want to just let it fly anymore. I want to be slow to speak, especially when I'm angry. Some of you need to resolve today that you're not going to let this day go by without doing that. Some of you mismanage anger in other ways, and you get cold and distant, and you just withdraw from people. And you need to go to someone, and you need to say, you know what, I need to ask your forgiveness, and I need to start handling anger differently. You know, life is too short, and intimacy and community is way too precious for you to get to the end of your life and see major relational damage that was done because you never actually resolved that you're going to handle anger in a way that honors God. Life is too short. Intimacy and community are too precious for you to do that. You need to turn around. All of us in here have the opportunity to do something this week. Every one of us can resolve this week, when I get angry, I'm not just going to flip into default mode. I'm going to think before I respond. And if I tend to blow up, I will pause and I will think and I'll respond calmly. If I tend to avoid and need to learn how to confront, I'm going to pause and I'll take a breath and I'll have the courage to actually speak the truth in love. If someone has hurt me, if someone in my relational life is someone that I need to forgive, then I'm going to start that down that road this week. It may take some time. This person may not cooperate. I may not be able to have a reconciled relationship with them, but I need to get released from this inner bitterness that's just like eating me up inside. Well, these are just the fundamentals. The relational equipment of this is a football. This is how you put on your socks. It's just as simple as it could be. And now the question is, will you do it? Be slow to speak, James says. Will you do it? Let me ask you again. James says, be slow to speak. Will you do it? Yeah. You don't need to be that slow to speak. Be quick to listen. If you become a world-class listener, I mean, if you look at people and you ask questions and you're genuinely concerned about their answers, and if you have appropriate touch in your relationships, if you embrace people when they need to be embraced, if you're slow to anger, if you master your tendencies to mishandle or mismanage anger, if you do these things, not as techniques to kind of gain favor with people in your life or like to gain favor with important people or something like that, but simply as a way to extend love, then I will tell you, you will have more friends than you know what to do with. And it can happen. You can make progress on these areas of your life, and you can start today. And if you will do it consistently year after year, you will get to the end of your life and you'll look back at such relational intimacy and connectedness and richness and community and warmth and love that is just amazing to you and the people around you. You will be able to say, I'm so grateful that I took and applied God's wisdom in this area of my life. You'll repair relational damage and you'll avoid tanking relationships that you most want to build into and love. You'll get to the end of your life, and I guarantee you, you will be grateful that you follow God on this. And if you don't do this, I believe you will get to the end of your life and you will look back at a mountain of regret. It's so simple. James says, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. And if we do this, every one of us, the reality is we will be a community, we will be a church that people will be breaking down the walls to be a part of. We can do this. Are you with me? All right. Let me pray as the band comes back up to lead us. God, we're so grateful for this foundational, just fundamental, very simple wisdom from James. And my simple prayer then is that we would apply it starting now, that we would go from here and we would start practicing this. we would practice being slow to speak, being quick to listen, being slow to anger, and that it would completely revolutionize our relational lives. And God, I pray that you would continue to bring this to our minds this week as we go from here, as we're in conversations. Help us to remember what it is that you've taught us this morning. And I pray that it affects us in a profound way. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. So now would you just take a moment and fill out that next step card and then place that in the offering basket when it goes by.
So what can I say?